Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, joined in studio all the way over to my left, our ESPN senior writer, Ramona Shelburne, and right here in the middle, senior writer for The Undefeated, our friend Mark Spears. So fun today. Malika Andrews is also going to join us. We're going to talk Nets Bucks. Ooh. First, though, to truly appreciate what Paul George did last night, you have to go back in time a little. Back before COVID and the bubble, back before the whole streetlights over spotlights thing, before the party in Oklahoma City with Russell Westbrook and Nas, and before a Thunder beat writer asked if he'd be willing to take on tough defensive matchups in the playoffs, a question that PG answered with the quote, "Y'all haven't met playoff P yet, have you?" Before all of that, Paul George was a 23-year-old in Indiana who had just won the NBA's Most Improved Player Award, had made his first All-Star game, and had led his team to what would be the first of two consecutive Eastern Conference Finals. This was back in 2013, and PG was doing things like, this. Take a listen.
Here comes George, got the step, and stuffs. What a move! It counts on the foul! Sensational move.
We are seeing a superstar in the making here with Paul George.
A superstar in the making. That series was against a Miami team at the height of its powers, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, and yes, LeBron, who had just won his fourth MVP award and who PG spent most of the series checking. And that Eastern Conference Finals went seven games. Frankly, the Heat were fortunate to get out of it alive. And Paul George walked away with a whole new understanding of what he could be in the NBA. So fast forward to nearly a decade later. Last night, PG was wearing his white Clippers jersey as he walked onto the floor in Utah. But if when you squinted, you saw a tinge of Pacer yellow, nobody could blame you. Paul was aggressive from the start, although so were the Jazz, who clearly smelled blood after learning that Kawhi Leonard's injured knee could keep him out the rest of this series. Utah hit 17 threes in the first half alone. 17 threes in the first half. But the Clippers never seemed rattled. And in the second half, it was PG who started tightening the screws, just as Donovan Mitchell seemed to run out of gas on the other side. Mitchell has been fighting an ankle injury throughout this series, and the more he played last night, the more you could see him struggle to push off or get to the paint or get much lift on his shot. Meanwhile, LA was getting contributions from all over. Marcus Morris was big in the third quarter. He would finish with a playoff career high, 25 points. Reggie Jackson had a great fourth quarter doing stuff like that. Just woo. And Terrence Mann climbing the stifled tower with a dunk that seemed to rattle the rafters. And through it all, Paul George was there, scoring basket after basket after basket, until he'd finished with 37 points on 12 of 22 shooting, 16 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 blocks. Afterward, Ty Lue described the way George had put the team
just
on his back.
Before shooting, I said, T, I got us. And he said the same thing after the game. He said, man, just thank you for trusting and believing in me, all season long. And I said, man, come on, are you serious? Like, he's been phenomenal.
I don't know if phenomenal P has the same ring as playoff P, but the win did put the Clippers in control of the series. They can close it out tomorrow night in LA. And just as importantly, it helped PG, who has now topped 30 points in three consecutive games, take another step clear of the controversy of the past few years, even as fans and, yes, other players have tried to keep him there. Remember when Devin Booker was trash-talking Paul earlier this season? That memory is a little more spicy now that PG and Book are just a game away from facing each other in the Western Conference Finals. Although if the Clippers do get there, and it's still an if, I'm guessing we won't hear as much sniping at George this time. Sometimes to go forward, you have to take a page from your past. And that is exactly what Paul George did in Utah last night. He wasn't just playoff P, he was Pacers P. And that turned out to be exactly what LA needed. So, Mark, do you think Game 5 was a turning point for the Clippers?
Oh, definitely. It's putting them in a position that's haunted them for years. Mm-hmm. A chance to go to the conference finals.
Yep.
They are 0-8 in this position. And playoff P has a chance now to make himself part of a Clippers story that hasn't been told.
Mm-hmm.
If he could be what we saw yesterday, if he could get them past this point, if he could do it in this building next door to us, he will always be a legend in Clippers people's eyes, and they could say whatever. But if he could get him to this next point, which I think he has the ability to do, There's gonna be some other P nickname they're gonna come up with.
Phenomenal P, apparently. Yeah. Ty Lue floating last night.
You know what I like to? Bill Plaschke, a friend of mine, asked Paul afterwards. He goes, "So is this playoff P?" And Paul, like, I think we overuse this term, okay? But Paul didn't shut him down or anything like that. He just smiled. He said, "Sure."
He didn't mean it to me. Yeah.
You know why that was big for me though, Rach? Like, he always says too much. That's a problem. But he's like a real human being, and he's so honest, and he says what he's really feeling and he's really thinking.
Don't we like that?
And we love that. But you know what? Sometimes when you say too much, those words come back and they get twisted around on you. And then when you hit the side of the backboard, that's all we say and all we see. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It's something Chauncey Billups has been working with him on, and they've been mm-hmm. talking to him a lot as he's coaching him to be, by the way, the real PG, point guard. Mm-hmm. Okay? Paul George, point guard. He's running the point for them this year. Mm-hmm. And, it, you know, don't say it so much. Like, just keep it calm. Keep it grounded. And I think Paul gives us the quote we want to hear. And last night he didn't. Mm-hmm. Last night he was so locked into what he's doing, and it's about what he's doing on the court right there. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought this, and the more I've been watching him, he's great as a one. Like, he's such a nice person mm-hmm. that when he gets next to Russell Westbrook as another alpha, when he gets next to Kawhi Leonard, he's another alpha. He's so nice. He defers. He kind of loses himself a little bit. I think he's a great two. He blends with everybody. But when he's a one, as you were talking about in Indiana, he's great.
Yeah.
And Kawhi's been out. He's been great.
And we don't talk about him defensively.
Yeah.
I mean, that, by the way, and I noted this at the top of the show, the playoff P thing, the whole reason he even said it was in response to a question about
Correct.
His defense. You can go back and watch the clip.
Yeah.
The first time he utters playoff P, the thing that, like, got everybody all crazy, the question was, are you the kind of guy, and this was sort of people in Oklahoma City who were new to him, are you the kind of guy who's going to ask to get switched on defensively to the other team's best player? A topic, by the way, that has come up quite a bit in NBA circles this week vis-a-vis Giannis Antetokounmpo and Kevin Durant. We will get to that later in the show. But apparently that is of huge value in the NBA community, and he is the guy who said over and over, yes, I want to do that. To him, that was playoff.
That's
how I saw him first as a defensive guy.
Right.
Before he was a great offensive player. Yesterday, he held them to 4-13 shooting from the field, caused 2 turnovers. He has the complete package, and I think, that could vault him finally to the conference finals.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, I want to switch gears to the Eastern Conference because, boy, that was a game last night, friends. Sixers blowing a 26-point lead at home in Game 5. The Sixers falling apart in the second half particularly. In fact, Joel Embiid and Seth Curry, the only Philly players to make field goals in the second half. This loss stings even more after they relinquished an 18-point lead to the Hawks in Game 4. How unlikely was this comeback? Exactly. This graphic is amazing. According to win probability, I know it's hard to see on this screen the way we have it, but the Sixers had a 99% chance to win entering the fourth quarter with 7 minutes left. It was still 98.6%.
Oh, my gosh.
Then it starts to go in the other direction, falling to 86 with 3 minutes left, 46 with about a minute left, minute and a half, and here we go. I mean, that's just... That chart is incredible,
right?
And this is the Hawks win probability chart. I know I'm mentioning numbers from the Sixers side, but Ramona, how can the Sixers recover from this loss?
Oh, got to take a breath.
Okay,
got to take a breath. And then you need, and this is, I hate saying this because Doc Rivers is such a great coach, okay? And he's such a great leader. But I've seen his teams have this happen to them a couple of times. And I think some of it is Doc is a great leader. And sometimes the guys on the court look to him for leadership and they don't do it themselves. And when they're out on the court, there's a way that you can settle people down. And it's not just by scoring, okay? Seth, you mentioned this earlier, Seth Curry and Joel were the only people to score in the second half, okay? One, you look at actually what went wrong. They went to the all-bench lineup, and they put Tobias out there because he's been struggling, and they wanted to get him going. Doesn't work.
Nope.
Okay, Ben misses a couple free throws. He's got to come out. 4-14 from the line. That's not going to work.
Nope.
But superstars win NBA championships.
Mm-hmm.
And Joel Embiid finished second in the MVP voting this year. He is a great player. He unbelievable first half in this one. But he can do more. He really can.
Mm-hmm.
He's averaging 16.9 field goal attempts per game. He can get 20, 24, 25, 26. He can actually do more. He is that dominant, and when you have this happening to you on the court and it's getting away from you, just feed the big guy every time.
In the mortal words, a giant from Mo Better Blues, this is the roughest of the roughest. They have given the Atlanta Hawks confidence.
Yeah.
This is a team that was...
Okay, time out. I don't know if anyone needed to give Trae Young confidence.
No. That's right.
No, I said
that's
the right. Hawks.
I get you.
Collectively, they have given them extreme confidence. They're in the lead now.
Yeah.
They're this We Believe team now.
Yeah.
And this city is behind them,
man.
It's crazy in Atlanta. We got Quavo going to be there tomorrow. Yeah. Maybe Andre 3000 shows up with his flute.
Yep.
You know, Killer Mike. Like, it's that's going to be a crazy, crazy situation. And that's what I mean by roughest of the roughest.
Mm-hmm.
You got Friday night in the A?
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, man.
In like, the summer, too.
I remember KG, Kevin Garnett, in 2008. He won't agree with me with this. But the only time I ever saw him rattled by a crowd a little bit was in Atlanta when the Celtics played there. That place, I know people don't give it the respect it deserves, but at this level, it's an intimidating place. So it's the roughest of the roughest for the Sixers going into that house with
you gotta
deal with him there.
Mark, you sound like you want to go.
I mean,
you get teleportation.
If I can get on Rachel's private jet, I can
call me when you find that private jet. I've never seen it. I will say this about Joel Embiid. To your point, he could be, but the Joel Embiid I saw last night, he was having trouble in that second half doing more. And that is, of course, because of the knee injury. And it's a shame because he's been in such great shape all season, so this is not a fitness issue. But you get tired when you are playing on an injured, hobbled leg. It takes so much more energy the entire game, and we are seeing him wear down a little bit at the end of games, so that's a problem. And the Ben Simmons problem is something that they are going to have to figure out how to solve. It is worth remembering there was an inflection point about a third of the way through this season where Daryl Morey could have made a more godfather offer than he clearly did to trade Ben Simmons for James Harden. And I don't know what extra little piece it would have taken from what he actually offered to the Houston Rockets, but I do know that at some point you can push yourself over the top if you put enough in, and Daryl Morey certainly knows that of anyone. And I just think, I'm not saying he should have done it. I'm not. I want to make that clear.
Yeah.
It is just interesting to remember that as we look back, once we see what happens in this series, because you could have had James Harden not on the Nets, but on your team, so that super team in Brooklyn would not have been as super. And maybe Ben Simmons' trade value, if, again, if. I'm not looking to trade Ben off of the Sixers, but if that is what the front office decides, if they decide that, his trade value is less.
So I agree with you on the point at large. I don't know that it was an issue of the Godfather offer. I think it was more, would Houston even really talk to them seriously? Mm-hmm. Were they a stalking horse? Were they ever really in there?
That's fair.
Or they were just there to, you know, to bid
Again, though, I want to make this clear. So to listen to me, Internet. Yep. I am not saying that Philly should trade Ben Simmons. I am saying this is a reality thing that happened in the NBA this year, and it is context for what is going on right now.
I'm going to say Miami should have did it.
Well, we'll talk about that, too, in the break. Coming up, Zion Williamson slated to have his third head coach in three seasons. How will that impact his career? All right, let's move on to the constantly evolving coaching carousel here in the NBA, because here are the current job openings. After yesterday, this number is up to 6 open positions. This is fantastic. I'm just going to play that. Can we play this for the whole rest of the show?
This is great.
Tremendous work out of our production staff. Atlanta technically still has Nate McMillan under the interim tag, by the way, so not on this full screen here, but still. Let's focus
there might
on the
be
Pelicans.
Two more jobs on that list.
Whoa, Mark.
Mark keeps saying this.
Dang.
Just throwing it out there. Sam Van Gundy is out in New Orleans. We'll get to Mark's other not very subtle digs about Milwaukee and Atlanta in a minute. Zion Williamson having his third coach in three seasons with the franchise. How do you think this turnover will impact the former number one pick? You spent a lot of time down there.
I hate to see him keep having somebody in his family speak for him. If that's how you feel, say it. If you want
to. So you're referring to share with our friends here?
It's somebody in his family, according to Athletic, is saying that he's not unhappy. But that's been a thing since Zion was drafted. So if you got to say something, he should say it. Now, because it's just bringing him more drama. When everywhere he goes now, do you want to come to New York? Mm-hmm. Do you want to come to LA? Like, it's just adding more drama to Zion. And in New Orleans, they're sensitive to this.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Paul departed when the ownership was bad, right? Anthony Davis' dad was unhappy there.
Sure.
Anthony Davis wanted out. So I know my New Orleans folks now. They're real, real sensitive to this. So I think it's anytime he want to go get a beignet or some gumbo or some of that real good Popeyes they got there, they're going to be asking him if he's staying or not. And it's going to be more than annoying because not him, but because of somebody else.
That's a great point, Mark. And I think when you have a player like Zion, you want to win. I mean, he doesn't need to apply any pressure.
No.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to flex. Like, you want to win with Zion Williams because he's awesome. And, like, when he came into the league, who would you have thought would make the playoffs first, him or Ja Morant? Which franchise do you think would have made the playoffs first in terms of what he walked into, in terms of the situation? Mm-hmm. And David Griffin wants to get this right, okay? And I thought Stan Van Gundy.
And he got him.
Yeah.
He got a summer to get it right for him.
Right? And look, Stan Van Gundy did one really good thing for Zion is that he put him as a point guard.
Point guard.
Yeah.
Played him in that point position. Forward, he is great in that spot. Zion still has to work at the defensive end, so they don't have to hide him on defense. But he is great in this point guard role. They need to find somebody who Zion respects and entrust that person. And I say person because Zion
that
respects
him. That'd be Teresa Witherspoon. Say it again. Say it loud, people.
Why isn't she on the carousel?
Dude.
That's right. Put her on the carousel.
Put her on the carousel. Team Spoon, keep going.
It's your show. Put her on the carousel.
I am just a
order
cog.
That is who Zion respects. Okay?
Yeah, this summer is important for the Pelicans. They got to get it right. They got to get the shooting. They got to get the players. They got to get to the playoffs.
Right. Teaspoon will be coming. Producer Steve said in my ear, Teaspoon is coming soon on the carousel. We are going to make that happen.
And when you say they got to get it right, they got to get the shooting, okay? There are some great shooters out there who are free agents. One of them is named Duncan Robinson from the Miami Heat.
Accurate.
He's a restricted free agent. But
he could be pried away.
Yep. You can throw a lot at him.
Maybe in a trade.
Yeah.
Here is something else. You mentioned the other cities, whatever. Zion Williamson is going to be with the New Orleans Pelicans for a long time. They control his contract rights for 3 more years. They're not looking to trade away the great luck that they got in drafting him. And he should want to be in New Orleans for a long time.
Yeah.
This is a fantastic. I hear
remember him
on
the lottery night?
Don't have to tell Mr. LSU here. This is one of the premier cities in America. It just is.
Yep.
And it is a franchise that is ready to explode around him the minute they have some playoff success. The people in that market will go nuts. He is already loved. It is already a good fit. There is already the making of a good roster around him. This is not a broken situation in any way, shape, or form, but it does need to be glued together more firmly, and the franchise has a chance to do that this summer, and they all need to get on the same page. If it's the front office, if it's Zion, if it is his family, get on a room, get those beignets. Let's get to work because he can be elite for this New Orleans Pelicans team. Coming up, the All-NBA teams were released earlier this week. Should the voting for these teams be positionless? You may have heard me make that point 803 times on this show. I'm going to make it for the 804th time after this break, but I'll do it in a new,
fresh, interesting way.
Yeah. So that's why you have to stick around. And Mark's going to argue. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, joined by Mark Spears, Ramona Shelburne. It was all good for the Suns a few days ago as they advanced to their first conference finals in 11 years after sweeping the Nuggets. But things change. They move fast in this league. And yesterday, Chris Paul entered the health and safety protocols with no definitive timetable for return. Mark, you know Suns coach Monty Williams so well. How is he ready to meet this challenge? Because I said yesterday, to me, they could not be looking at a better option for who is going to lead them through a very difficult situation.
No, Monty has certainly been through a lot of tragedy, off the court, obstacles on the court. But, man, this is tough. he's a praying man, and Monty's definitely going to be through it. Has certainly been doing a lot of praying over the last couple of days. Chris Paul is phenomenal.
Yep.
This is supposed to be his moment. This is supposed to be his time when he can finally get to the finals. And this isn't the regular season where you're just playing, tomorrow we got Orlando and the next day we got Sac. No, you have an elite team that's trying to get to the finals, that's trying to keep you out. This is the worst time.
Yep.
The worst time. And you know, God best campaign. I think he's doing the best he can. But, man, I'm hoping for some good news for CP because I don't want no asterisk on this for the Suns. I want them to be able to play with CP and see if they could finally get back to the finals and get there for the first time with him.
Yeah.
I would like to say a word for campaign, though. I covered that first round series when Chris Paul could not lift his shoulder and Monty Williams had to keep taking him out in the second half.
Yep.
And when he took him out, Cameron Payne did a heck of a job out there. Like, this is a guy who was almost out of the league. We're talking about going to play in China. Like, nobody wanted to give him a shot. He was signing 10-day contracts.
They couldn't play.
I mean, look how good he has been in these games when he has been asked to go in there. And I thought Monty did something interesting in that Lakers series when Chris Paul was out. He took him out. He would give him a chance to play. And if it was clear that he was laboring and he could not do it, mm-hmm. he would sit him in that second half. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an empowering thing to do for the rest of your team because, one, it gives clarity. It says, okay, Chris is sitting. We don't have him now. It's on you guys. There's no Joel Embiid in the second half of that Atlanta game where he's 0 for 12.
This is all true, but I will say, because I was doing sidelines for a couple of those games, mm-hmm. you could hear Chris Paul every second, yep. even when he was
oh,
on
yeah.
the bench. He was shouting instructions, doing this, the
true.
Pointing, the other thing. And I do think it is a different thing to be doing it where he is just locked in a, you know, room somewhere. So I don't know.
There's two CPs, but there's a difference in one of them.
Well, yes.
Well, let's
yes,
they get an earpiece for the rest of the team.
They could pipe him in,
sort of Bergerac style, right?
They could do. I will just say again, I think Monty Williams is up for the challenge, but it is absolutely an enormous challenge. I do want to talk about the All-NBA teams. They were announced Tuesday, but yesterday was just too bonkers for us to get to it. First team featuring Giannis, Steph Curry, Luka Doncic, Kawhi Leonard, and MVP Nikola Jokic. Two guards, two forwards, and a center there. This is going to come up because second team featuring MVP runner-up Joel Embiid, LeBron James, Julius Randle, Damian Lillard, and Chris Paul. Again, two guards, two forwards, a center. And the third team features Rudy Gobert, Jimmy Butler, Paul George, Bradley Beal, Kyrie Irving. So, Ramona, when you consider that the top two MVP candidates this season were centers, is this yet another argument for the argument I have been making till I am blue in the face that all NBA should be positionless?
Absolutely, Ray. I mean, look, Joel Embiid and Damian Lillard, by the way, mm-hmm. had more votes than the number five finisher on the first team, Kawhi Leonard.
Yep.
Not to take anything away from Kawhi.
More All-NBA votes.
They had more All-NBA votes. The way you do it is you get 5 points for a first place vote,
yep.
for a first team vote, 3 points for a second team vote, 1 point for a third team vote. Now, Joel Embiid was eligible at both forward and center. So he got quite a bit of first team All-NBA votes. I was one of those.
Me too.
Okay.
Forward position.
Forward. You could put him at a forward.
Yep.
However, when the votes were tabulated, they placed them in the category where they got the most votes. So he got the most votes as a center because more people put him as a second team center.
Right.
Understandable, but you have a situation where you have Kawhi Leonard having less votes than two guys who are on the second team.
Yep.
Which means a lot of us voted Dame Lillard on the first team.
Yep.
A lot of us voted Joel Embiid on the first team. And yet, because of the way it's categorized positionally, it didn't work. Now, the other way, Jason Tatum got a little argument here. He was eligible at both guard and forward.
Mm-hmm.
He had more votes than the last place finisher on the third team, which was Kyrie Irving. That's a lot of money that cost Jason Tatum.
So Jason Tatum had an escalator clause in his contract. If he had made All-NBA, he would have gotten $33 million extra dollars. So that position designation, to Ramona's point, it was because of that. He had the votes, but because of the position designation, he is now out $33 million. You, on the other hand,
old school,
mon frere, You say...
You can't kill the center.
No one's killing them. In fact, I want two of them on the
first
team.
Who's killing who? Is the power forward. There is no such thing as a power forward no more.
They're all point forwards.
So let them... Like, this. Here's why this doesn't make sense to me. Right? First of all, the voting should reflect the way the game is played. We're talking about Zion as a point guard. We're talking about, all these guys. And, Eric Spoelstra is the one who pushed what had been going on some teams in some places into a just
flat-out
thing.
We got to change everything. Game's over. We do the Kobe All-Star rule in the game.
When there's this much money tied to those votes.
And also, by the way, this is interesting to me that you don't vote anymore because of that.
Yeah.
A man of principle, which I appreciate.
Yep.
I don't understand how MVP, I kept being told over and over, is not about who the best player in the league is. I get chastened every year by people screaming at me.
This is all a beauty contest.
Because they're like, well, the best stats for this season. I'm like, great, let's just call it the best season award and then have an MVP be for who is the best player today if the aliens came down and you had to pick someone. That is not what MVP is apparently for. It's just who had the best stats that season. Coach of the year is supposed to be for something else. Can all NBA just be for here are the 15 best guys this year? And that way we have a historical snapshot of these are them. Here are the five best. Here are the next five best. Here are the next
five best. And Rachel, when we voted for Joel Embiid on our first team, because we moved him to forward, it kind of messed up your ballot for the third team.
For some of the later guys.
For the later team, where I got to a choice where I had to find
because
someone to vote for.
Because you had to have a center in that spot.
And there's not as many people eligible at center. So I didn't feel bad about voting for Bam Adebayo, but I would have rather voted for Russell Westbrook. Okay? Would have rather voted for Russ there. It boxes you into these positional categories so you don't end up with the top 15 players.
There is no award for who are the best guys. There's just no award right
Bill
now.
Bill Russell's
that.
Ruining his grave right now.
But why would you say that about our very present and alive Bill Russell?
I'm just being silly.
Yeah.
My Lord. I'm looking at you thinking, oh, my God.
You're going to catch that. You're going to catch
know
that.
Know about it?
Bill Russell's alive and well.
Thank
but
you. I had a little heart palpitation
Come
there.
Come on, man. Let's leave the old school centers alone.
I am the one trying to put two of them on first team All-NBA.
Yep.
The game is positionless in so many ways right now. And, again, if we can't use MVP to just recognize, hey, who's the best player this year, and we all know it, and we can't use some of the other awards to do it, how about we do it with All-NBA? Positionless, here are the best 15. Go. I dare you, NBA. Awards reform.
Can I still
think about it.
Be
about it. Put as many centers as you want. We put
tradition?
Two.
I put two on the first team.
All right, Ramona has to run to a radio show. She's very busy. We appreciate her time. I am too. But
I heard you on the Zoom call at midnight last night. I know.
You're multi-platform. She's very famous. All right, coming up, ahead of Game 6 tonight, we got Malika Andrews coming in. She's going to join us to talk about the Bucks preparing for tonight's game, how James Harden is feeling after playing 46 minutes in Game 5. She's in Milwaukee. She has some entrance music. I'm telling you, you're going to want to keep it live.
Entrance music?
You got music now?
I'm just saying, she has it.
That's when you know you made it.
Team USA starting to shake shape here. Brad Beal, Jason Tatum joined Dame Lillard and Draymond Green as reported commitments to play in the Olympics this summer. Mark, is Team USA starting to look like a gold medal team? Because that is the bar.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're going to be in Vegas. They got, I believe, 5 or 6 exhibition games. It's all about chemistry. And that's what Coach Pop has to get them all on the right page. And he has about 3 or 4 weeks to do that in Vegas.
Well, Jason Tatum was sort of the bright spot of that team in China that did not play so well. So maybe that experience will help him and he can build on it for this.
No, he'll be sensational for you.
Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, still joined by Mark Spears. And guess who's back? Giving us a little more detail on that Nets-Bucks series, our NBA reporter, Malika Andrews. Thank you for stopping by, and your fabulous producer, Andrea Pelkey. We appreciate
it.
Malika, James Harden played 46 minutes on that right hamstring in Game 5. Did not look like himself out there, but the Nets got the win after the game. He said about his minutes, it's a lot, but I am built for it. What have you learned about how he is feeling in the day and a half since, and how much do you expect him to play tonight?
Well, Steve Nash said yesterday that he came through the night, even after carrying that workload, Rachel, feeling good. Now, I don't know if good is relative after playing that many minutes, coming off of some hamstring tightness with that much kinesiology tape on, but that's what Steve Nash said. They've also said that he is available to play. Now, look, Nash also added that he doesn't know which version of James Harden is going to show up here, right? Is he going to potentially look more comfortable because he's experienced what his limitations exactly might be, and there's some comfort level around that? Or is that fatigue from those 46 minutes going to impact his legs? That's what Nash couldn't answer to us. But he's going to play. He's going to give it a go. And if he played 46 minutes in game one, I'm not going to put a limit on him tonight.
You know, I kind of look at it as some YMCA 46 minutes. I mean, if you look how James Harden played, which was brilliant by the Nets, I mean, he was basically, what, going from three-point line to three-point line?
Yeah.
So it wasn't quite the normal 46-minute one would have, sprinting up and down the floor. In a lot of ways, he was a decoy, didn't really shoot great, but he made great plays, and his presence on the floor was amazing. But it reminds me of that old cat named Steve, who's at the Y, and all he does is...
Is his name always Steve?
It's always Steve.
It's always Steve.
He goes three-point line to three-point line,
Steve.
But his team always wins, man.
Well, here's my question to you, though. Were you surprised the Bucks didn't go at him more?
Yes.
And try to move him around more defensively.
Yeah.
That was shocking.
Take him off some screens.
I mean, it was sort of late developing that he was back in that game after he'd been ruled out the day before, but you knew he was playing. I mean, we knew a couple hours before the game, so I assume the Bucks have the internet.
A lot of diving to
and
the basket, stuff like that.
Yeah, I just was very confused about why they did not try to take advantage of the fact that he was clearly less mobile. I don't know if we're going to see a change tonight, Malika, on the Bucks side of things. They not only had James Harden, who they didn't try to exploit the fact that he wasn't that mobile, they also allowed Kevin Durant to drop 49 on them. So how are they preparing to make things different tonight?
Well, I was speaking with some of the members of the Bucks organization last night, Rachel, and I asked them, are you going to attack James Harden more? And they said, yeah, we're going to try. We don't necessarily want to play him one-on-one all the time. Even this limited capacity, James Harden, they didn't have a lot of chutzpah when I asked them why they wouldn't want to do that. And they told me that, well, perhaps we want to put him in more pick-and-roll situations that we can exploit those sorts of things on the defensive end. But what sticks out to me from that game is down the stretch when James Harden has Giannis Antetokounmpo one-on-one, James Harden waves off the help defender, takes Giannis one-on-one, and Giannis takes a fadeaway shot, right? Those are the things that they've been buckling down in film, right? Those are the things that they've been buckling down on in film, I've been told over the last several hours, trying to look at that, trying to make those adjustments. But we also know, right, Rachel and Mark, that Mike Budenholzer isn't a huge fan of adjustments when he doesn't believe they have to make them. And this Bucks team believes that, look, it required Kevin Durant going off for 49 points to beat us. We don't expect that, or Jeff Green to go have 27 points again tonight. That's what they're expecting.
Boy, no, KD, I think when he sees Giannis on the other end, I know he has LeBron on this level, but he sees Giannis as one of the few people that are trying to take his perch. So to me, I know when he sees Giannis, man, he takes his game up to a different level. He wants to shut down this stuff the same way Kobe wanted to keep LeBron down.
Well, here, I want to get to the matchup between them, because first of all, Malika, that's excellent reporting of what Milwaukee is saying. Yeah. Counting on Kevin Durant not to be good doesn't seem like the best strategy to me, but hey, I do want to get to a quick soundbite from Giannis, who answered a question about not guarding Kevin Durant for much of that 49-point masterpiece. Here is what he said about guarding him going forward. Take a listen.
Sure. I want to take the challenge, and, obviously everybody's going to have a chance to guard him, but I would love going to game six to be able to guard him, and if coach wants me to do that, I'm ready for that.
I would love to go into game six with more of a chance to guard him. Do you think that actually is going to happen, Malika?
Well, the qualifier at the end there, Rachel, is if that is what Mike Budenholzer asks him to do, right? And so we know that he has success, right, on Kevin Durant when he guards him. In this series alone, he's kept him to 5 of 7 from the field. Over the last 8 seasons, for any defender of the 43 defenders that have guarded him for 50 or more shots, Giannis has kept him to the lowest shooting percentage, right? So we know he's successful. But from what I've been told, don't expect Giannis to open up guarding Kevin Durant. They like Drew Holiday, they like PJ Tucker, they like Chris Middleton on him, and have Giannis be the help defender. I know that's not the sexy answer, but that's what I'm expecting to see, at least to open it up.
Yeah, what they like isn't working. Like in 2018, I was at a game at Oracle Arena, and Giannis gave Kevin problems with his length, with his physicality. Yeah. Kevin ended up getting ejected from the game. To me, that's the only time I've ever seen any defender make Kevin work. And I said this yesterday, he's got the length, he's got the athleticism. It's like he's looking at somebody in the same body size in the mirror. That doesn't happen for Durant. Like, at some point, I don't know what the coach's game plan is, but some of these players, I know Chauncey and them used to do this with the Pistons. Like, all right, I know coach said this, but this is what you're doing. Coach can't run on the court and make you do this or that. And I don't expect Kevin to do none less. I think he's going to destroy them if they continue this game plan.
Well, we'd like to see decision-making from the Bucks on the court to be better all the way around. Some of the shot selection, obviously talking about those Giannis, again.
Pride.
Doesn't make sense. Go to the hoop. If you have that skill set, do something different, especially early in the shot clock. We will see whether that happens tonight. We're going to switch gears, talking about what's going on in Dallas coming up next. Luka Doncic made his first public comments today since the Mavs and general manager Donnie Nelson parted ways. Stick around to hear his reaction. And Mark Spears has a reaction to the reaction.
Is that accurate? Made a comment?
I'm just saying.
The Dallas folks.
Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, joined by Mark Spears, Malika Andrews. Yesterday, the Mavericks announced that they had parted ways with their longtime president of basketball operations, Donnie Nelson. Luka Doncic commented on Nelson's departure today. Quote, "It was kind of tough on me. I really like Donnie. I've known him since I was a kid. He was the one that drafted me. It was tough for me seeing that." but I'm not the one making the decisions there. Mark Spears, you hinted at this yesterday. What do you make of Luka's comments?
Well, you know, the playwright Sophocles once said, no one loves a messenger who brings bad news.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Dallas, I tried to give you a heads up. I knew you guys weren't happy about it, and neither was a lot of the Homer media there.
Mm.
And that's okay. I think everything will eventually work out. You know, Luka has a great manager, Laura Beth Seeger, Bill Duffy, his agent, is a great agent who has had such international superstars as Steve Nash and Yao Ming. He'll take the money, I'm sure. I'm sure they'll figure it out. But when there's smoke, there is fire, and there was fire today. That I warned you about. That's it.
Oh, Rachel, I mean, look, in order to keep Luka happy, I know I am saying water is wet, but isn't there only one answer here? And that is to win. They need to go and win. And yes, that means it's easier said than done. They need to come in and potentially bring in a player who can also break down the defense, who can be a second option. They need to address whatever's going on with Kristaps Porzingis and Luka, all of this stuff. But he said, I'm not the one that's in charge here. Maybe he's a little bit more in charge than one thought. Now, I don't think he's going to turn down a $200 million contract, especially with that smile he threw us when he was asked about it at the end of the season. But win. Just go win.
Well, look, yes, he will sign the extension. We keep saying that. No one's trying to take him, quote, out of Dallas or any of that.
No.
But clearly, there needs to be a little bit more buy-in. And I always think it's actually very smart of organizations that take their star players' opinions into account. It does not mean that they're running the franchise or the balance of power is run amok. It means that if you have buy-in from them and they are part of the decision-making process, they are then partly responsible for what happens and then less likely to flee or want to flee later. So since I believe that Luka Doncic is in Dallas, maybe even for good, like Dirk Nowitzki, bring him into the fold in the front office now. Let him help make some of these decisions. We'll see if it happens. Thanks, guys. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bye, Hall.